are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, December 4th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the Judiciary Committee hearing the legal reasons that compel the Trump impeachment as we speak. Meanwhile, after sending a report to Judiciary, House Intel Committee gets call records showing the network that worked on the Ukraine pressure, and it includes Devin Nunes. Meanwhile, in Barcelona, COP25 opens. CO2 emissions hit a record high. Trump administration looks to revoke food assistance for hundreds of thousands of Americans. And meanwhile, almost half of Americans work in low-wage jobs.
Low-wage jobs? Impeachment.
The chief law enforcement officer of the country, William Barr, has threatened communities that don't give proper respect to cops that they could lose police protection.
Oh no, anything but that.
Senate set to confirm another lifetime judge. This one wanted to ban fertility treatments. And Trump storms out of the NATO summit because his friends are two-faced.
Fake friends.
Key Mueller witness indicted for a $3 million illegal campaign contributions, including one to Clinton, one to a Democratic PAC, and one to Trump's inauguration. And by one, I mean million. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. Everyone is here today. Full house, as it were, in a studio. We have been watching the House Judiciary Committee impeachment hearings. At this stage where we're at, and, instead of going live with these today, I found them actually more interesting perhaps than I thought I would. But there is no finding of fact at this hearing. It has been only four law professors, three of whom were called by the Democrats, one by the Republicans, who are arguing essentially the legal history of the concept of impeachment, whether the facts as presented in the hearings that you may or may not have watched and have been recounted in the House Intelligence Committee report constitute an impeachable offense or impeachable offenses. And three of them say yes. One of them says it's going to make everybody mad, and so it shouldn't. And we will play clips from all of that in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's get to this. Let's do the NATO stuff. Do we have a clip of? So this is pretty stunning. And I think there's something relevant about this to what we're watching in terms of the impeachment. And it's not a defense of Trump, but it is an explanation of Trump. Donald Trump is incapable, for whatever reason. I'm not a trained psychiatrist. In fact, I'm not even an amateur psychiatrist. I'm not an untrained psychiatrist. I'm not in any way a psychiatrist.
You're an untreated patient.
I am a treated patient.
I'm a treated one.
Highly treated patient. Not necessarily cured. But Donald Trump, I think, has a genuine inability to distinguish between him and what personally has to do with him and what has to do with the country.
Yeah, the one that matters is me. I'm the only one that matters.
And I think it plays out in a multitude of ways. Not the least of which, of course, it's in America's interest to leverage aid that has been congressionally appropriated for Ukraine's defense for my benefit, because if it benefits me, it benefits America.
He used to say, what's good for General Motors.
That's right.
That's how he's
good for Trump. It's good for America.
And that's the difference.
That's the
between
difference.
Eisenhower and Trump.
Exactly. And here is Trump. Well, first, this is what starts off. Now, the second one that we have up there, right, is when he's telling people he's leaving, right? Yeah, okay. So let's start with this. This comes out in, I don't know, I think it was Euro News, whatever. I mean, literally Euro News. There's a cocktail party. And it's actually sort of fascinating to watch these guys gather around and talk like you would. I mean, it's so normal that it's almost bizarre. Yes. So you've got Boris Johnson there. You've got Macron. You've got Trudeau. I can't see who else is there. Who is behind that guy?
A whole cavalcade of ghouls.
Yeah, but there's also was there anybody else? Were there any other leaders there?
There were a couple.
I think the only like players though are like it's Trudeau is mainly talking and Macron and Boris chat a bit too.
Okay,
so everybody else
Mark Rutte and Princess Anne,
but they're not
okay.
Saying
Princess
anything.
Anne. All right, so and so the you can hear them talking, but it is captioned. And they are literally like, they're talking like you could see. I'm quite convinced that, you know, if you went to like a high school and a cafeteria, they would be like, man, did you see that guy? He's such an idiot. Here is what they are saying. Watch his team's jaw drop to the floor. Yes, no, I think that's Doral. Yes, in Miami. They're talking about Trump. And they're mocking him. And they're all going like, can you believe it? Oh, I got stuck in a 40-minute press conference with that boob. And so...
Et tu, Boris?
Exactly.
Well, I would like
this
to
this is interesting,
that.
Too. I think the reason why, and then what happens is Trump reacts and he gets really mad at Trudeau. And this, again, is about as high school as it gets because he realizes he can't get mad at his only friend there because then he'll be totally isolated. So he gets mad at the guy that he thinks he and his friend can gang up on. Like, It is, I know that I am reducing this down to the most juvenile perspective, But that is exactly what the point I'm trying to make that he does.
Yeah, it's like when my best friend didn't like her birthday present, so she got mad at me, but not her boyfriend.
Mmm, interesting.
Exactly, it's your fault.
Did you have a video of Prime Minister Trudeau talking about you last night?
Well, he's two-faced.
You think that Germany's too naive?
And honestly, with Trudeau, he's a nice guy. I find him to be a very nice guy. But, you know, the truth is that I called him out on the fact that he's not paying 2%. And I guess he's
not very happy. So I just want to be clear on what happens here. Like, he was invited to, I think, to, he was invited, I don't know if it was to Canada or whatnot, the question. And and Trump rejected it. And why'd you reject it? He's two-faced. And then he realized, like, oh, I'm showing too much that my feelings were hurt. And so what he does, and you'll see this, he tries to make it about, and it's an insult to America. And nothing could have been further from the truth. We see the video. We see what he's saying. He's making fun of Trump. He's actually expressing some type of empathy for Trump's advisors. But here, Trump is going to make it like he's mad at America. And then he slips at one point when you'll see.
And I guess he's not very happy about it. I mean, you were there, a couple of you were there, and he's not paying 2%, and he should be paying 2%. It's Canada, they have money, and they should be paying 2%. So I called him out on that, and I'm sure he wasn't happy about it, but that's the way it is. Look, I'm representing the U.S., and he should be paying more than he's paying, and he understands it.
There so it is. Imagine, there's the tell. Go back. I'm representing the U.S. In other words, he's trying to transfer the insult to him personally onto the United States of America, because that way he doesn't look so petty. He has the level of awareness to realize, I can't look this petty and this injured. Because honestly, like, this is the closest I have ever come, and believe me, I'm still miles away, to feeling some sort of empathy or sympathy for this guy, because he has, like, I can imagine, you know, my 6-year-old son seeing his friends around the playground just like say something and clearly laughing at him and going over and going, like, don't worry about it, buddy.
Do you guys have the tweet I sent you, though? Because I do want to make a very important, extremely important point, because there's an election coming up on December 12th in the UK. And I really hope that President Trump gets this message, because Boris Johnson was not disrespecting you. And I'm sure he would love to have a public meeting with you in London before the election. He is totally not like Two-Faced Justin.
Right.
And I think the people of the UK would love to see your tremendous friendship. And I would encourage everybody to tweet that at both of them with the hashtag Trump Johnson.
Right, because
tremendous,
of course,
friendship.
Johnson doesn't want to be seen with Trump at all.
Boris Johnson has personally requested that not happen. But I'm saying that that's not really the truth.
Do
he
you
loves
think
Trump
that,
and wants
that
to meet him.
Johnson was trying to speak loud
yes,
enough
I
to
do.
Get caught on that
yes.
and that he
yeah.
Do you
yes.
think his people
yes.
released the video?
1,000%.
Yeah, yeah, I think they
yes,
were taping
I do.
It.
I
and it's
I,
fascinating
not
though,
for a second
that
do
Trump
I doubt that.
Does not
I
get mad.
Mean girl stuff.
Trump does not get mad at Johnson.
Well, the other thing that's very bizarre and very juvenile about Trump is, look, he just slapped sanctions on Brazil. Bolsonaro is pathetic in his worship of Trump, which you think is what Trump wants. Erdogan disrespects Trump to his face, and Trump's like, tough guy.
I like getting egged.
It's, I mean, honestly.
I like getting egged.
Yeah, he has no respect for people who
honestly,
are going to be cucked by him.
So I think that I hope we can leverage it to some extent, because the guy's a lunatic and he's insecure. But and yes, I 100% think it's from Boris Johnson, because yeah. they've been closing the polls because they released secret documents saying, yes, the NHS absolutely is on the block. People in the UK, pay attention.
Right. Folks, we're going to get into the impeachment stuff in just a moment. But I should tell you that support for today's show comes from Third Love. Third Love designs bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and a premium feel. This is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own. How do I know? I don't know. I don't wear bras. But These are ones that have straps that won't slip. They're tagless labels. And we had our official Majority Report bra tester try it out. She writes, I like that they don't have a zillion options, so it's easy to choose something quickly. The fit is great. I usually have to return most bras I order online, even though they're in my size. I ordered two and both fit. That almost never happens. Super comfortable for an everyday bra, but not as boring as most t-shirt bras. Subtle, cute details, so I don't feel basic. Every customer has 60 days to put their bra to the test. These are lightweight. They have super thin memory foam cups that mold to your shape. And here's the thing. You get that 60 days to test it out. If you don't love it, you return it. Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Support charities in their local San Francisco Bay Area and across the United States. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/majority now. Find your perfect fitting bra. Get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/majority for 15% off today.
I'm wearing one right now.
Are you really?
Yeah. I don't want everyone in the chat to get all gross about it, but it's true. It's pretty good.
Oh, good. And I also, I like that we dropped in that I don't feel basic. I know that term now. I know that. My daughter's now in that age where she's like, that's basic. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying. It took me a long time to pick that up.
Oh, your daughter is cool.
Folks, also, we should tell you this. Your furniture should suit your needs while also feeling uniquely you. That's basically the order in which I actually approach everything. Functionality and then some measure of style. I think there's a little bit more style involved here, to be honest with you. But whether you're hosting friends or for the holidays, you just want to spend a night in, with Joybird, you'll be doing it in your way. With Joybird, your personal one-of-a-kind style should match your furniture. Bring your mood boards to life with hundreds of customizable pieces and over 50 fabric options. This seems like it was, it's sort of shocking that you didn't have a company like this before. But with Joybird, it doesn't matter if you're a neutral beige or a bubblegum pink person. If you can dream it, Joybird can build it. Joybird even offers a range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options so that your creations can stand the test of time and the wrath of your furry friends and toddlers. And free fabric swatch kits, as well as free personal design consultants, are available to help you make the perfect choice. Create furniture that matches your own fearless style at joybird.com/majority25. See how Joybird can help you make your dream space a reality today. joybird.com/majority25. Go to joybird.com/majority25 and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code majority25. Check it out, folks. Fantastic furniture. They have a brick and mortar place just down, not even, almost before you even get to the subway from here. I go by there, just lounge. There's Sam again, sitting on our couches. Folks, lastly, show sponsored today by Capterra. Would you rather be busy or be productive? Start making your work take less work and find the right software for you at Capterra.com/majority. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. So check this out. They have 700 specific categories of software that relate to just about every possible type of business or endeavor that you could get involved in. It's stunning. I work my way through there and just fantasize about having a different job. Yeah, I mean, you could actually go there if you were looking to try and figure out you want to change your careers. You go there and just get ideas. But they have 700 specific categories of software. And then within that, they have over 1 million reviews of the various different softwares for these specific categories. So it could be like you own a kennel. And there's like 10 different kennel operating softwares. And then they have hundreds of reviews of all those different softwares. They get over 1 million reviews of products from real software users. You can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Doesn't matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. And folks, this is totally free. Totally free. It's sort of like a Consumer Reports for software. They don't weigh in, but it's all, you know, actual users of the software. Visit Capterra.com/majority for free today to find the tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, that's Capterra.com/majority. Capterra, software selection simplified. And I would check it out just if you're looking to change careers. Go over there. Just see what's available. I had no idea. When I was raised, I honestly thought there were two jobs you could have, lawyer or car salesman. That was it.
Is there a software for a communist podcast?
There could be.
Where does car salesman fit in?
My uncle was car salesman.
I know. What kind of cars?
Chrysler. Buicks.
Wusta.
It's pretty big. It was a pretty big place. And then everybody else I knew was a lawyer.
Right.
Every other male. I guess my mom was a teacher, but she wasn't working when I was. So that was.
Well, now you're using both of those skills.
That's right. Selling cars and practicing law. I shouldn't without a license. All right, let's jump right into the House Judiciary impeachment hearing. So look, here's the deal. This is the way that they're running these impeachment things is that theoretically there are four other committees that are involved. House Oversight. I'm not sure the other two, to be honest, Financial Services and Intelligence. They are looking at different issues. The Ways and Means is the fourth. They are looking at different issues of a potential impeachment, articles of impeachment. They are investigating them. If they come across one that they find it rises to the level of impeachment worthy, they send it to the Judiciary Committee. Let's start with this clip. This is Noah Feldman. He is a professor, I think the Felix Frankfurter professor of law at Harvard. And this is interesting. We hear the terms high crimes and misdemeanors. And I always assumed that the word high in this is clip number two, I think it is. The word high in this was an adjective that qualified the crime in terms of like it has to be a crime that is big enough that reaches a certain level. But in fact, no, that is not what it means. Here is Professor Noah Feldman to explain.
Let me begin now with the question of why the framers provided for impeachment in the first place. The framers borrowed the concept of impeachment from England, but with one enormous difference. The House of Commons and the House of Lords could use impeachment in order to limit the ministers of the king, but they could not impeach the king, and in that sense, the king was above the law. In stark contrast, the framers, from the very outset of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, made it crystal clear that the president would be subject to impeachment in order to demonstrate that the president was subordinate to the law. If you will, I would like you to think now about a specific date in the Constitutional Convention, July 20th, 1787. It was the middle of a long, hot summer, and on that day, two members of the Constitutional Convention actually moved to take out the impeachment provision from the draft Constitution. And they had a reason for that. And their reason was, they said, well, the president will have to stand for re-election. And if the president has to stand for re-election, that is enough. We don't need a separate provision for impeachment. When that proposal was made, significant disagreement ensued. The governor of North Carolina, a man called William Davey, immediately said, If the president cannot be impeached, quote, he will spare no efforts or means whatever to get himself reelected. Following Davey, George Mason of Virginia, a fierce Republican critic of executive power, said, no point is more important than that impeachment be included in the Constitution. Shall any man be above justice? He asked, thus expressing the core concern that the president must be subordinate to the law and not above the law. James Madison, the principal draftsman of the U.S. Constitution, then spoke up. He said it was, quote, indispensable that some provision be made for impeachment. Why? Because, he explained, standing for re-election was, quote, not a sufficient security, close quote, against presidential misconduct or corruption. A president, he said, might betray his trust to foreign powers. A president who, in a corrupt fashion...
All right, this is... All right, that's not the right clip. I'm sorry. That is just basically the reason why impeachment exists. And the reason why impeachment exists is because it's not sufficient to have a re-election, leave it up to an election, not just because, of course, you could be in a second term of your presidency. I think at that time, maybe at the time of the founding, there was no restriction on how many times you could run for president, if I remember correctly. However, the point being that the president, the impeachable offenses could be that he is doing things that are beyond the pale, or she is doing things beyond the pale to get reelected. And that's highly problematic. Okay, so this is the clip that I was talking about before. The question of high crimes and misdemeanors. High crimes. I always took that to being an adjective that was qualifying the nature of the crimes, that they were particularly bad. And it was just sort of like old Englishly to say they're high crimes, like haute couture or something.
Oh, I thought it meant you were high when you did the crimes.
No. That is not what it is.
My bad.
It doesn't mean what I just said either. Here is a law school professor to explain what high crimes means in this instance.
How does this language of high crimes and misdemeanors apply to President Trump's alleged conduct? Let me be clear. The Constitution gives the House of Representatives, that is, the members of this committee and the other members of the House, quote, sole power of impeachment. It's not my responsibility or my job to determine the credibility of the witnesses who appeared before the House thus far. That is your constitutional responsibility. My comments will, therefore, follow my role, which is to describe and apply the meaning of impeachable offenses to the facts described by the testimony and evidence before the House. President Trump's conduct, as described in the testimony and evidence, clearly constitutes impeachable high crimes and misdemeanors under the Constitution. In particular, the memorandum and other testimony relating to the July 25th, 2019 phone call between the two presidents, President Trump and President Zelensky, more than sufficiently indicates that President Trump abused his office by soliciting the president of Ukraine to investigate his political rivals in order to gain personal political advantage, including in relation to the 2020 election. Again, the words abuse of office are not mystical or magical. They are very clear. The abuse of office occurs when the president uses a feature of his power, the awesome power of his office, not to serve the interests of the American public, but to serve his personal, individual, partisan, electoral interests.
All right. Do we have a clip where he describes what high is? Because that's the only clip that I wanted to play. Let's play it.
There's no mystery about the words high crimes and misdemeanors. The word high modifies both crimes.
Where's the audio?
This is the clip.
There's no mystery about the words high crimes and misdemeanors. The word high modifies both crimes and misdemeanors, so they're both high. And high means connected to the office of the presidency, connected to office. The classic form that was familiar to the framers was the abuse of office for personal gain or advantage.
All right, so there you have it. The high refers to the fact that you're president, that the office itself, these are crimes committed while you're in office. The point being that as from a practical matter, the president cannot be indicted, largely because he has control over the Department of Justice, not necessarily in just Trump's case, but broadly speaking in terms of the institution. And the Office of Legal Counsel has determined in this instance that a president cannot be, a sitting president cannot be indicted. And impeachment is the only recourse for a crime committed by someone of that high authority, in other words, the president. That's it. Do we have the clip? It does not appear so. Where we get a definition of what the word bribery means in this context. There was no legal definition at the time of the Constitution for bribery, except for as it applied to a very specific positions. I think it was customs officials. There was no federal criminal act known as bribery. And so we go back to where it was in Britain. Here is Carlin explaining. This is Pamela Carlin. She is a law professor. She's probably my favorite law professor, I should just say. I don't know why.
People have
favorite law professors, but I never took her in class, but she's my favorite law professor.
Do you
professor.
Have to play pickup with LeBron for him to be your favorite player?
That's
Sam.
True. That's right. Carlin explains why President Trump's demands on Ukraine constitute the impeachable offense of bribery in this instance. And it's, I mean, look, I don't know if Trump had never done anything and you called these law professors in and you asked them, here is like, you know, talk about what constitutes bribery, what constitutes an impeachable offense, because as these law professors articulate it, it literally sounds like how Trump would describe his job description.
Do President Trump's demands on Ukraine also establish the high crime of bribery?
Yes, they do.
Can you explain why, please?
Sure. So the high crime or misdemeanor of bribery, I think it's important to distinguish that from whatever the U.S. code calls bribery today. And the reason for this, in part, is because
thank you.
In 1789, when the framers were writing the Constitution, there was no federal criminal code. The first bribery statutes that the United States Congress passed would not have reached a president at all, because the first one was just about customs officials. And the second one was only about judges. So it wasn't until, I don't know, 60 years or so after the Constitution was ratified that we had any federal crime of bribery at all. So when they say explicitly in the Constitution that the president can be impeached and removed from office for bribery, they weren't referring to a statute. And federal, and I will say, I'm not an expert on federal substantive federal criminal law. All I will say here is the bribery statute is a very complicated statute. So what they were thinking about was bribery as it was understood in the 18th century, based on the common law up until that point. And that understanding was an understanding that someone, and generally even then it was mostly talking about a judge. It wasn't talking about a president, because there was no president before that. It wasn't talking about the king, because the king could do no wrong. But what they were understanding then was the idea that when you took private benefits or when you asked for private benefits, in return for an official act, or somebody gave them to you to influence an official act, that was bribery.
And of course, that's exactly what Donald Trump did. It is to the letter exactly what he did. She also gives Pam Crowley, do we have the example of the cop asking for the bribery? Look for that. In the meantime, let's first go back to the opening. Let's go back to the opening of the hearing where the ranking opposition member, Republican Doug Collins, gets upset about impeachment in the opening statement. This is basically what the Republicans have done, you know, throughout this. They're not taking, they're not actually exploring this whatsoever. And in any fashion, they have no interest in determining whether this was impeachment or not. This is the era that we live in. There should be no surprise. I should say that at least as of the first half of the questioning from including the opening statements and the first half of the questioning from the Democrats, at least from the lawyer, Republicans, they attempted a couple of times to sort of impede the process. Not as dramatically as I thought, but here is Collins sort of laying it out, and he attacks he basically claims that these law professors are not taking it seriously, which is a little bit ironic. But listen to Collins here.
You just don't like the guy. You haven't liked him since November of 2016. The chairman has talked about impeachment since last year when he was elected chairman, 2 years ago, November 6th, 17th, before he's even sworn in as chairman. So don't tell me this is about new evidence and new things and new stuff. We may have a new hearing room.
Just for the sake of math, that was a year ago. That was a year ago when he was sworn in. Good.
New evidence and new things and new stuff. We may have a new hearing room. We may have new mics and we may have chairs that aren't comfortable. But this is nothing new, folks. This is sad. So what do we have here today? You know what I'm thinking? I looked at this. And what is interesting is there's two things that have become very clear. This impeachment is not really about facts. If it was, I believe the other committees would have sent over recommendations for impeachment. Now they're putting it on this committee because if it goes badly, I guess they want to blame Adam Schiff's committee and the HSPC and others want to blame this committee for it going bad. But they're already drafting articles. Don't be fooled. They're already getting ready for this. We've already went after this with the Ukraine after numerous failings of Mueller, Cohen, annulments, the list goes on.
Emoluments. The idea that Donald Trump would, and he goes on, Collins goes on to says, like, you guys, you got the reports from the Intelligence Committee yesterday. You couldn't possibly looked at this stuff. You just come in and give your opinion. Here is how Pam Carlin responds to Here's how Pam Carlin responds to that opening comment from Collins.
In my review of the evidentiary record, and here, Mr. Collins, I would like to say to you, sir, that I read transcripts of every one of the witnesses who appeared in the live hearing because I would not speak about these things without reviewing the facts. So I'm insulted by the suggestion that as a law professor, I don't care about those facts. But everything I read on those occasions tells me that when President Trump invited, indeed demanded foreign involvement in our upcoming election, he struck at the very heart of what makes this a republic to which we pledge allegiance. That demand, as Professor Feldman just explained, constituted an abuse of power. Indeed, as I want to explain in my testimony, drawing a foreign government into our elections is an especially serious abuse of power because it undermines democracy itself.
Carlin goes on. We're talking about Pam Carlin. She's a Stanford law professor. She's an appellate attorney. You know, you get to this level of law professoring, you will go out and you will do cases. In fact, I think she at one point represented the entire committee a couple of years back. just coincidentally. But Carlin gives a great, probably the best description, or I should say analogy, that really illuminates just how problematic what Donald Trump did. I think it is sometimes difficult for people to say, I mean, to really understand the implications of what Trump did, because Ukraine is an abstraction for a lot of people. They were going through a civil war, or I should say they were going through an invasion where they got attacked and 10, 14,000 people died. Sometimes people look at it and get their perspective is in some way tainted by this notion that the United States maybe did not handle the breakup of the Soviet Union properly and was too aggressive in courting
Ukraine.
We're
dishonest about NATO expansion.
Yeah, I mean, all
fundamentally,
of it.
Yes. And destroyed the economy and reduced life expectancy. These are things that happened.
All these things, and I think that taints some people's perspective on what happened there. But here's Carlin sort of laying it out in a way that I think strips this issue of all those extraneous aspects.
What happened in 2016 was bad enough. There is widespread agreement that Russian operatives intervened to manipulate our political process. But that distortion is magnified if a sitting president abuses the powers of his office actually to invite foreign intervention. To see why, imagine living in a part of Louisiana or Texas that's prone to devastating hurricanes and flooding. What would you think if you lived there and your governor asked for a meeting with the president to discuss getting disaster aid that Congress has provided for? What would you think if that president said, I would like you to do us a favor. I'll meet with you. And I'll send the disaster relief once you brand my opponent a criminal. Wouldn't you know in your gut that such a president had abused his office, that he'd betrayed the national interest, and that he was trying to corrupt the electoral process? I believe that the evidentiary record shows wrongful acts on that scale here. It shows a president who delayed meeting a foreign leader and providing assistance that Congress and his own advisors agreed serves our national interest in promoting democracy and in limiting Russian aggression. Saying, Russia, if you're listening, you know, a president who cared about the Constitution would say, Russia, if you're listening, butt out of our elections.
It's a great example, I think. It makes it very clear. If there was assistance that was coming from a state or from, you know, Canada, you know, maybe even makes it even a little bit less exotic in some way and has a lot less sort of cross currents. The bottom line is whether, as an individual, I agree it's in our national security interest to provide material aid to Ukraine is irrelevant in terms of the structure of our government, in terms of the way that our government works and checks and balances. It had been established that it was in our national security interests to provide this money to Ukraine. It had been appropriated. And Donald Trump said, you're only going to get it now. Don't tell anybody else. We're going to hide it even internally as to why we're holding back on this money. Don't tell anybody else. You're going to get it once you just announce that you're investigating Joe Biden. I mean, that seems to be a pretty open and shut case. However, there was a dissenting voice at the hearing today. Jonathan Turley, he is a George Washington University Law School professor. He, I think his perspective on some things have been good in the past, some things not. He brings in a lot of things that don't seem to be about the law in his testimony, or at least his opening statement. which is that it's bad for the country and it's going to create bad feelings.
He's more about feelings than facts.
He's lying. The feelings supersede the facts. Here is Turley saying that we're doing impeachment too fast. Now, remember, there have been three. This is the third impeachment hearing that has ever taken place. Johnson, who was a Democrat, the radical Republicans were impeaching him. I think it was one vote short of a conviction in the Senate. You also had Bill Clinton, who was impeached in the House, failed to convict in the Senate. And this one, Nixon resigned before impeachment hearings actually started. And see if you catch what is a little bit disingenuous about the way he presents how unique he tries to make this one seem. There's been three now, including this one.
My testimony explores the impeachment cases of Nixon, Johnson, and Clinton. The closest of these three cases is to the 1868 impeachment of Andrew Johnson. It is not a model or an association that this committee should relish. In that case, a group of opponents of the president, called the Radical Republicans, created a trapdoor crime in order to impeach the president. They even defined it as a high misdemeanor. There was another shared aspect besides the atmosphere of that impeachment and also the unconventional style of the two presidents. And that shared element is speed. This impeachment would rival the Johnson impeachment as the shortest in history, depending on how one counts the relevant days. Now, there are three distinctions when you look at these.
Pause for three comments. I just want you to contemplate what he's trying to set up there. He's trying to make it seem like this one's going so fast that it's almost unprecedented. This is the third impeachment process that has taken place. It's not over yet. This is the third one. And he's saying this one is almost as fast as the first one, but not as fast as the second one. In other words, it's right in the middle. It is exactly the median speed.
This is the.
But instead.
Yeah, well, he's also saying it's politically motivated.
Well, he's saying that it's politically motivated is in the other comment. And of course it's politically motivated. Every impeachment that has ever taken place has been politically motivated. It is a political process. That's not to say that it's distinct of a crime. Johnson, there were multiple articles of impeachment about Johnson, ranging from ignoring Congress to being drunk and going around town cavorting.
That ain't no crime.
He also has said, Jamie, you didn't hear any of the testimony. He wrote in an op-ed, you don't need to have a crime to be impeached. You need to have an offense. So the point being here that Turley is trying to be specifically disingenuous. He's trying to make it seem like this is being rushed. And his only example is one that is a little bit faster than this one. And then there's one other one that went a little slower.
Small sample size.
That was the first.
Continue
World
on
Series
what
that went
he
to
has
seven
to say.
Games.
This impeachment would rival the Johnson impeachment as the shortest in history, depending on how one counts the relevant days. Now, there are three distinctions when you look at these, or three commonalities when you look at these past cases. All involved established crimes. This would be the first impeachment in history, where there would be considerable debate, and in my view, not compelling evidence of the commission of a crime. Second is the abbreviated period.
Pause it. And that's why later in this hearing, he is asked specifically about the op-ed he wrote in the Wall Street Journal that you don't need a crime for impeachment. Not to mention Pam Carlin, who in her opening statement made it quite clear that bribery itself was not a crime when it was written into the Constitution as a reason for impeachment. A crime is defined by federal statute. Crimes don't exist but for in religion in nature. And so his testimony is garbage. There was no crime of impeachment, of bribery by a president when the Constitution was written. It just simply didn't exist as a crime. It was just a, it was a transaction.
Compelling evidence of the commission of a crime. Second is the abbreviated period of this investigation, which is problematic and puzzling. This is a facially incomplete and inadequate record in order to impeach a president. Allow me to be candid in my closing remarks, because we have limited time. We are living in the very period described by Alexander Hamilton, a period of agitated passions. I get it. You're mad. The president's mad. My Republican friends are mad. My Democratic friends are mad. My wife is mad. My kids are mad. Even my dog seems mad. And Luna's a golden doodle, and they don't get mad. So we're all mad. Where has that taken us? Will a slipshod impeachment make us less mad? Will it only invite an invitation for the madness to follow every future administration? That is why this is wrong. It's not wrong because President Trump is right. His call was anything but perfect. It's not wrong because the House has no legitimate reason to investigate the Ukrainian controversy. It's not wrong because we're in an election year. There is no good time for an impeachment. No, it's wrong because this is not how you impeach an American president.
Well, first off, he said it was wrong because it's not going to make everybody less mad. And that is also not a reason to or not to impeach a president. I mean, he has a 56-page opening presentation. He only read part of it. The other ones had a 6 to 10 page. And it is because when you do not have the facts or the law on your side, you bang on the table, as they say.
Well, I mean, I just also think, and it is, especially if you are, you know, invested in this broader process, as we all are to some extent, the fact that the Republicans will absolutely try to impeach the next Democratic president, literally regardless of anything that's happening right now, like that's
regardless of who gets mad,
that's going to happen. That is simply a function. I mean, at the bare minimum, they will attempt to destroy that president with every tactic available short of impeachment, if they don't impeach, which I'm sure they will. Then you have to ask yourself, how do you change that dynamic, right? And his answer behind all the flourishes is, let the president do criminal activity, and then maybe everybody will be less upset.
Be less mad.
My wife! I'm mad!
He is in trouble for saying it was not a perfect call, though.
Well, that's another.
That's
that,
right.
I mean,
it
Matt,
was
sorry,
actually.
No,
was
that was
perfect.
That was talk about rhetorical goalpost shifting.
Well,
he calls it a slipshod process, and the only evidence he cites for that is how fast it's going.
Exactly.
Compared to the 1860s. Which
exactly.
Is like, we
and
have
there's
cars
no.
Now, buddy.
Has anyone in any venue at any time made a single refutation of the facts in this case? People can say what he did happens all the time, which is actually what Mick Mulvaney said when he admitted that they did it. You could say this is not, it doesn't constitute bribery because he didn't say quid pro quo. You can say all of those things.
And say he really cares
about
corruption. But
the actual facts that took place here, you cannot find a single individual in any venue anywhere who has refuted a single aspect of what came out during those hearings.
Or you could say, and you know, let me build a fantasy universe for a second. Right out of the gate, we're opening impeachment proceedings against him for emoluments. his hotels and how that relates to support for criminal conduct in Yemen. High crimes and misdemeanors, especially as I'm learning more and more how it's defined, I don't think there's an excuse for not impeaching him for what he's done with immigration and concentration camp policy.
Without a doubt.
I don't think, like, I used to think, like, that is the analytically and morally correct position. Now I think it's inescapable. If we're using these definitions, inescapable. And that should have been done on day one.
The most legitimate criticism I think that you can level at the Democrats is that they are refusing to hold him to account for a whole raft of things that he should be impeached for. A whole raft. And that if, or that they should explicitly say, we're doing this one just because it's, you know, Al Capone with his taxes. And because it is the most sort of like explicit. Here is, do we have was it Carlin that did the what clip is it?
This is the one that was right before we came on.
I'm talking the cop coming up. 11:57. Grab this clip. The other thing that you will hear by Republicans, they do not refute the facts. They say instead that, well, the facts are that they never got the press conference where the president of Ukraine announced that there was an investigation into Biden. They never got the press conference where they said that they would investigate the 2016 election interference. And they got their money. So no crime was committed. And You cannot impeach because he only attempted bribery. Well, this is a perfect analogy, I think, that shows why that falls apart. And it's Pam Carlin who says it, right? Okay.
Impeachable act.
Professor Carlin, does it matter to impeachment that the unfounded investigations the president sought were ultimately never announced?
No, it doesn't. And if I could give an example that I think shows why soliciting is enough. Imagine that you were pulled over for speeding by a police officer, and the officer comes up to the window and says, you were speeding, but, you know, if you give me $20, I'll drop the ticket. And you look in your wallet and you say to the officer, I don't have the $20. And the officer says, okay, well, just go ahead, have a nice day. The officer would still be guilty of soliciting a bribe there, even though he ultimately let you off without your paying. Soliciting itself is the impeachable offense, regardless whether the other person comes up with it. So imagine that the president had said, will you do us a favor? Will you investigate Joe Biden? And the president of Ukraine said, you know what? No, I won't, because we've already looked into this and it's totally baseless. The president would still have committed an impeachable act, even if he had been refused right there on the phone. So I don't see why the ultimate decision has anything to do with the president's impeachable conduct.
What's the danger if...
There you go. The question isn't what happened after the president broke the law or committed the impeachable offense. Again, it's like, you know, the example I used with Tim Pool was like, if I'm shooting at someone and trying to kill them, just because I miss does not mean like I'm off the hook. I missed.
Sound like Sanders.
I mean, there it is. I mean, and we may have more, over the next couple of days. Is there, what else do we have? Was there anything else? Nothing else. What was it? All right. If we have that one clip where, do we have it? Well, all right. I don't think we need it. I mean, I think that's the only sort of leg that the Republicans had to stand on, which is that it was just attempted solicitation of a bribe. But no, it wasn't attempted. It was solicitation of a bribe. That's part of bribery. Just like you fail at your crime does not mean that you get off. You fail at your law breaking. You fail at your impeachable offense. You don't get credit for that. You don't get credit for doing it poorly and getting caught. And then also remember, this is not a situation. I mean, Carlin gave that example of the cop pulling somebody over and saying, give me $20 and I'll let you off this ticket. And the person says, I don't have $20. And the cop says, okay, go on your way. The real analogy is the cop says, give me $20 and I'll let you off this ticket. And as you, the driver is fishing for that $20, the sergeant pulls up and gets out of the car and goes, what's going on here, Sully? And Sully goes, nothing's going on. All right, you're on your way. I was just checking because I just wasn't sure about the way they were driving. Go ahead. You're good.
Just making sure the engine's running right.
Yep. Look, Matt, that's what happened. I mean, let's be clear on this. The money was released to Ukraine days after the White House was aware of the whistleblower report and days after the Intelligence Committee had started its investigation into this. So that's the real metaphor. But hers works as well, too.
Let's play this, guys.
What's that?
This is Turley from the Clinton era.
Okay, yeah. We'll play one more clip of Jonathan Turley as a young man. What is he saying here? This is Jonathan Turley as a young man. Wow.
I always stipulate these things. I believe this is what his position was for sure. But, it's a 29-second clip. So in today's world, I always like to stipulate when we're doing these fresh, if there's, further context that emerges,
right,
we'll revisit it.
Let's hear what he had to say in the context of the Clinton impeachment.
Executive power exhibits the same physical properties as a gas in a confined space. When you expand the space, the gas will fill the space. You should not be misled. Your decision will define executive power and authority. If you decide that certain acts do not rise to impeachable offenses, you will expand the space for executive conduct. And we will have to live with that expansion.
Talking about
okay.
Blowjob.
Now, forget about, for a moment, step back from the fact that he's talking about Bill Clinton.
Yes.
That is exactly the point. If you say this is okay, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? How can you say, and look, for people, and I don't know whether he was arguing for or against impeachment there. I mean, what Bill Clinton did had nothing to do with executive authority. He was involved in a deposition that had nothing to do with his role as president. Was literally all about everything that didn't have to do with his role as president. But be that as it may, for people who are skeptics of impeachment, as far as I can tell, I mean, obviously Republicans are because it's a knee-jerk reaction. But I would say that the skepticism of impeachment from people who are actually in some way even following this appears to be A, that Democrats aren't doing the business of business. Now, this is an argument that Nancy Pelosi, Sherry Bustos also argued, that we don't want to get involved in this. We need to pass the new NAFTA to show that we're actually doing stuff. Now, that's a political argument.
Patriot Act.
And this is a political argument. And, people can disagree on this. But the reality is the Democrats have passed a multitude of pieces of legislation that are going to die in the Senate. All of them. Every single one of them. They don't even make it through the Senate. So to say that there's something else that Congress should be doing is ridiculous. In fact, I would say that tying up the Senate for a day Never mind 3 weeks or 6 weeks or 4 months or whatever it's going to be, so that they cannot continue the onslaught of judges they are literally ushering through this process, is the most material benefit that a democratically controlled Congress can provide at this moment. Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Bravo.
On top of which, if you are worried about presidential abuse of power, which we should all be, because we have seen it with virtually every single president, as far as I'm concerned, certainly that I've been alive, right? Like, I don't think the president should have the right to be able to assassinate an American citizen in the way that the Obama administration did, just for an example. And then I don't think a president should be able to allow a torture regime, spy on Americans, and lie us into a war, et cetera, et cetera. When you think that there's some measure of hypocrisy in holding Donald Trump to a standard that we haven't held other presidents for, if you're really interested in holding presidents to account, then what you do is leverage this to get this institutionalized. You create this as the baseline.
This should be a structural assault on executive power.
Exactly. Exactly. If you're worried about, like, if you don't think that this, like, if you're complaining about the quality and the nature of this whistleblower, and we shouldn't protect this whistleblower because we didn't protect other whistleblowers, you've got it backwards. If you're really interested in protecting whistleblowers, you don't argue that we shouldn't protect this one because we didn't protect the other ones. You say, because we protect this one, we should protect future whistleblowers. The whistleblower who blew the whistle on Jared Kushner's security clearances has been suspended. She has been retaliated against. And you hear no one talking about this. And what should be done is, just as we protected this whistleblower, just as the Democrats are protecting this whistleblower, we should call for the same protections for that whistleblower. And we should be calling for the same protections for every whistleblower going into the future. The thing that frustrates me about this, about watching the reaction to this process, is ignoring everything I just said. And the disingenuousness involved in, like, saying that I care about protection of whistleblowers, and therefore, because we didn't do it in the past to the extent that I think that we should have, I'm going to be against it now. That doesn't make any sense. It is, that's just, you're just opining. You're opining and you're preening. You're not opining to leverage any future reality. So, from what I saw so far, I was pleasantly surprised. I don't know that Nadler's as adept at this stuff as Schiff is, but to the extent that, and I know, again, I don't think a single person's mind is going to be changed by any of this. I don't think the Democrats who are worried about extending impeachment are going to be in any way assuaged. I don't think there's any Republicans who, if you had asked me 5 months ago, do I think there's a single Republican who would ever be moved by anything that could be presented? No. In fact, if you had asked me on the day after the election, I think I made it quite clear. Donald Trump is not going to be removed from office via impeachment unless he's caught naked running around on the front lawn of the White House. And that is because I don't think the Republicans are going to move an inch. But the point is that, part of the reason why you impeach is also for the future. We're talking a lot about the Johnson impeachment.
We should normalize impeachment.
For the left, it's a two-front interconnected war. I said a couple months ago, I think, on this show, that I read, I forgot who I was citing, but somebody with great sympathy and much agreement who was coming from the perspective you were just critiquing in terms of attacking the so-called intelligence and defense community and talking about the war on Chelsea Manning and Snowden and the charges against Assange and all that stuff, which I 100% agree with. And then I said, and incidentally, I just read Congressman Miller's piece in the American Prospect, and this is the same problem.
Yeah.
And that is the left position you have to chart, because absolutely. Look, I heard those law professors lauding, you know, some great, city on a hill democracy. I don't buy it for a second. I think it's delusional. And I think the executive branch has clearly expanded under both parties in a totally ungoverned way, in a way that is synchronized and overlaps with all of these horrifying defense and intelligence policies. And you have to fight both on both fronts. That's the only left position. You have to get rid of you have to reform espionage laws. You have to get rid of the drone program.
Well, it's also, frankly, you have to impeach Trump. Like a civil libertarian.
Well, that's precisely what it is. Not to get back into definition debates, but I think we need to bring for real civil libertarian back.
Right. I mean, you use this.
We really do.
You leverage this.
And it's the same goddamn thing. And of course, the resistance people, you know, mostly don't get it. But the left people need to get the other side of the equation, which is this executive branch thing. It's synchronized. It's the same war in many respects, yep, in my view.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, this show relies on your support to exist, to thrive. Every single person who has ever asked me, and I think there's been two or three in my life, like after you see them after a while, are you thriving? Has anybody ever said that to you?
All the time.
Seriously?
No.
The people who said that to me, I knew for a fact did not want me to be thriving. A.
That sounds very Hollywood.
No,
it was wrong.
Actually okay. It was actually that last CEO of Air America.
You know what? As soon as I said it, I was like, "Whoa, wait a second!"
And
Air America.
It was a prelude. He actually said to me, he goes, "Sam, how you doing?" I'm like, "Eh, I'm all right." I mean, he knew I didn't want to talk to him, and he's like, "Are you thriving?" I said, "Well, what? You thriving?" I said, "I don't ever thrive." And then he went on to say, "Like, I heard that you publicly." Said that I was a charlatan or something like that. And I said, yes, that is true. I did do that. I did that with more vim and vigor than I'm leading the rest of my life, I think I said to him.
I was thriving when I said that.
I think the other guy who said that to me was a radio guy. Maybe that's a big radio thing.
I could see that. They're like, oh, the AM hour, hope you're all thriving out there.
Anyways, folks, if you want to help this show thrive, become a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, we give you extra content. We also give you the free show, commercial free. So in other words, the free show gets even freer when you pay for it. I didn't say quid pro quo, so it's not a transaction. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, sign up for the AM Quickie. What's wrong with you? Why would you not be listening to that every day? Gives you the top headlines of the day, sometimes headlines that we even forget to mention on the show. And you know it first thing in the morning. 5 minutes. You can go to amquickie.com to sign up, or you can listen to it on the app. You get the free Majority Report app on majorityapp.com. And don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Generally, use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. But right now, I think they're having a 30% off sale. Should get another bag of the five-pound bag, too. Right, Brendan?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Brendan just gave me that. He's like, of course. Can't believe you didn't know that. Today
Brendan's got to manage you, boy.
Today is Wednesday. Last night was Tuesday. Michael, what happened here?
It was another just extraordinary show, but may I take 30 seconds to say this is the 48th anniversary of Fred Hampton's assassination. I want to plug a really good piece in Truth Out called 48th anniversary of Fred Hampton's murder. Rampant surveillance of Black liberation movement continues. I'd look up some clips of his. He really was in addition to the physical courage and the fact that he was assassinated by law enforcement officials and spied on by the FBI and Chicago police, his analysis for somebody so young is stunning. Only like early 20s, you know, just becoming an adult.
That's okay. Why they murdered him.
Indeed. Last night on TMBS, Big Waz returned. It was awesome. We did a deep dive on AMLO. The conversation with Slavoj Žižek was amazing. We covered so much. And in the post game, we talked with a labor organizer from the ground in Colombia about the strikes happening there. Bloomberg, is Singapore our future? Honestly, so much. I look at the descriptions and realize what we covered. I get exhausted, but somehow it all works. Patreon.com/TMBS. Links I'm starting to share now. February 7th, Bell House, TMBS, next live show. Grab your tickets now.
Jamie.
This week on the Antifada, Sean KB speaks with Justin Rozniak, a.k.a. Do Not Eat. He's a big Twitcher, bread tuber guy, about the real and sordid history behind the 1988 blockbuster Who Framed Roger Rabbit. How was this crazy film made? What does it tell us about the history of public transit in Los Angeles and elsewhere? Why is Elon Musk full of crap? And how would rail fit into the Green New Deal and socialism more broadly? I also wanted to plug the episode that I did last week because I was out and didn't get a chance to do it. And it's one I'd been wanting to do for a while. I had on poet / journalist Rachel Rabbit White, Nina Lowe from Decrim NY, and self-described horror of all trades Oyster, to talk about organizing in the world of sex work and why socialists should care about decriminalization and why this is a workers' rights issue, not merely a libertarian one. So we had a pretty wide-ranging discussion about that, and then they humor us and play our favorite game after the rev, imagining how the vocation formerly known as sex work could fit into a post-capitalist future. Also on Friday, for our patrons as a bonus, we released a Real Colin Tie Hours, wherein these modern day workers read a 100-year-old essay that Alexandra Colin Tie wrote about prostitution and see if and how it relates to our lives today. So check it out. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Sorry, real quick. I'm getting flooded here. 50th anniversary of the assassination of Fred Hampton. Apologies. 50th anniversary. The piece from 2017.
Apologies. Not good at math.
And also I'm anti-math, so don't even, I shouldn't even be responding to that. But it's Fred Hampton, so I'll make an exception.
Literary Hangover, we did Arthur Miller's The Crucible, the 1953 play about the Salem witch trials and McCarthyism. We talk about how Arthur Miller's marriage to Marilyn Monroe made him a target for the House Un-American Activities Committee, and why Abigail Williams, who John Proctor has an affair with in The Crucible, is sort of inspired by Marilyn Monroe.
All right, folks. Fun half. See you there. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, going to take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Door handle.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.